Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturer of the finest knife heat treat ovens available. Find your next heat treat oven at evenheat-kiln.com. Welcome to another episode of Knife Talk. Now, we've got another very special show today, as I've been hounded by you guys to get this guest, and he's finally agreed. So I'm pleased to be chatting with Trolsky today. So welcome to the show, Michael.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, at the end of every show, I ask people for a list of people that inspire them. And your name comes up every single time, without fail. So yes, well, just a huge inspiration to the knife-making community. So I personally have learned a lot from watching your videos. So thank you so much for sharing those experiences.
It's really nice to hear that because, you know, when I was starting my YouTube channel, it was like, I don't know, 7 years ago. I wouldn't expect that it would grow so big and so many people will be inspired by my movies. I try to show everything very simple as I am working with my knives. I try to keep everything simple, very simple machines.
Well, it's certainly helped me over the years anyway.
Yes, because, you know, it's not that hard to make a knife when you have a very advanced shop. But when you have only basic tools, it's a big adventure.
Definitely. So I've got so many questions for you. So I'm going to start at the very beginning with how long have you been making knives?
Well, I am making knives, I think, 10, 11 years. I started 10, 11 years ago.
Wow.
It was a hobby at start for many years. I tried many things in my life because I was very into the medieval reenactment. So, you know, I tried to make mugs out of clay, some antler jewelry, but there was always steel around me and I decided I need to try.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So tell us about that very first knife. Was that a replica of a sort of a medieval knife?
Yes, exactly. My first knife I made was a replica of a simple kitchen knife that was used in 15th century. And, you know, in medieval reconstruction,
yes,
there was a problem with knives because the knives were looking good, but they were dull after cutting a few slices of bread, or they were well heat treated, but they were really ugly. So I decided I need to take the two things from it and make a good knife and also looking good. So I use simple carbon steel. And, you know, there were some mistakes in the beginning. I am making mistakes even today. But I make one. Then I make one for my wife. And, you know, people, my friends, started to asking me for a knife. So it started like that.
Yeah. And everyone's better than the last one, right?
Yes. I'm trying to make better knives even today. That the one old one is, you know, the new one is better, but sometimes it's hard. Yeah.
so we're just into the new year. 2018 is just started. So what are your highlights from 2017?
Well, 2017 was a crucial year for me because it was the whole year. The whole 2017 was, I was a full-time maker because I started in October 2016. So, you know, this was a year that I was making knife 365 days. And I wouldn't expect that everything will go so fast because, you know, the Forging Fire, they invited me. Also, I visited Atlanta. I was in Blade Show. So two big trips to the U.S. in 1 year. When I was thinking about Blade Show, maybe in the future, but, you know, it's happened.
Yeah, well, it sounds as if you had a very, very busy year.
Yes, exactly, and I hope that this year will be also as busy as previous one.
Yeah, well, that was the next question. What are your plans for the next couple of years?
Making knives. Yeah, I want to be better in making knives. I want to improve my techniques because I know that in some techniques I have lack of skills. So, you know, I'm working constantly on my workshop, but it's pretty small. A few makers I invited from Poland to my shop, and when they entered the shop, they said, well, it's small because on your movies it looks like a big shop.
Mm.
And you know, I have like 18 meters square. My workshop is pretty small. So now I reach the level that I don't have a place for another machines.
Right. Yeah, you're full to the brim.
Exactly. So I reach my limit, and in the next 2-3 years, I am thinking about building a new workshop next to my house. You know, the big one. I mean, 3 rooms, one room for forging, one for grinding, and one for, let's say, clean work, right?
Oh, that's the dream.
Because now there's a big problem. You know, I'm forging, and then I'm grinding steel, and then you have to make a handle, and there is a dust everywhere.
Exactly, yes, yeah. Have you seen what Alex Steele has done, where he's got his own little grinding room?
Yeah, yeah, Alex is growing so fast. It's really nice to see him. I remember him from like 2 years when he was doing hammers, and he was well known about the hammer making. He got a big workshop. Even then, he got a big workshop.
Hmm. His new workshop is huge, isn't it? It's massive.
Yeah, it's a factory.
Yes, yeah.
Well, I hope to visit him. We were speaking a few times about this, so maybe this year. You know, we are living not so far away from each other, so.
Yeah, that would be great. That'd be great to see.
Just like 3 hours in plane, so no problem. So probably I'm going to speak with him this year, and I want to visit him.
Fantastic, fantastic. So whilst we're on the subject of YouTube, what got you into making videos originally? And has that benefited you in any way?
Well, when I was starting making knives, there wasn't good source of knowledge, of knife making knowledge.
Mm.
So, you know, I was learning something from that guy, something from that guy. And I decided I will share my knowledge, all I know, without hiding any tricks on anything. So it was the first movie. It was a slideshow of making a hidden tank knife. And I just do it because I like to share knowledge. I never expect that now, today, so many people will recognize my movies, my face, but it's not that hard, you know.
Well, I was looking at on your YouTube channel. You've had nearly 80 million views of your videos. And there's not that many videos compared to some people. So it just shows that the quality is fantastic.
Yes, many people are asking me who are editing your movies. And they don't want to believe when I say that. I just learned it because, you know, compare my first movie and the last movie.
Mm.
And there is a little, you know, improvement of quality.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's the quality of what you're making as well that really shines through, not just the actual video quality. It's the knives that you're making, you know?
Yes, I'm trying to show the process in a short way, because some makers are making movies that last, let's example, 12 minutes, and it's too long. People are getting bored in the middle of it. So I decided I will make my movies the way I would like to see other knife-making movies on the internet.
Yes, yes, that makes sense. Yes, yeah. Okay, so you concentrate mainly on sort of bushcraft-style knives. Is that a style that you'll be sticking with, or do you have plans for maybe a bigger range of knives?
I am treating knife as a tool. Hmm. It was my basic thought that this is a tool. Okay, the tool can look nice, so that is why I am using the stabilized wood, the mosaic pins with animals. But still, every customer who is buying a knife from me, I am asking him, but you will use it, right? So now I am focusing on knives that people are using during the hunt, during the bushcraft, the tripping. Mm. But in the future, you know, who knows? Now I have a few friends that they are making very advanced folding knives, and they are telling me all the time I should try to make a good folding knife. They, you know, they have plenty of machines and a huge knowledge. They want to show it and share with me.
Yes, yeah. I mean, some of the makers that I've seen for folding knives, it's just incredible work. Just so precise, you know?
Yes, exactly, the precision. I made like 5 or 6 friction folders in my life, and probably this year I will come back to this because I'm lacking of folding knives sometimes in my pocket. Yeah, fixed knives are really good for you know, where you're going to forest and you need to have a very strong blade. But when you go, you know, with kids to some small picnic, You don't need to have a big knife with you.
Yes, yeah. So whilst preparing for this interview, I asked people to send in any questions that they may have for you. And I'm going to announce future episodes on the Knife Talk Patreon page, which is patreon.com/knifetalk. So if any listeners wants to appear on the show with a question, they can do it there. But I've had a few questions specifically for you. The first is from Jeff Fader from Fader Knives. And he asks,
"Hey, Michael, thanks for all your awesome videos. You're super inspiring. You're a super guy. One question for you. How would you characterize the difference between American-style bushcraft knives and European-style bushcraft knives? Thanks again, and all the best."
Let me think. I think that the bushcraft knives made in Europe and the US, they have a lot of things in common. You know, I compare my vision of bushcraft knife and the American vision of bushcraft knife when I was in Atlanta on Blade Show. And they are very similar. Maybe my grinds are a bit higher.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Okay, okay. I've also had a question from Mike at Bristol Blades, and he asks, "What's the Chile logo? What does that mean?"
Okay, so basically, Chile logo have like 6 years, I think, now, because my first knife for 5 years I was doing without the logo because I couldn't develop a good one that is close to me. But it will be funny what I say. You can. I discovered my logo when I was in restroom after very hot food.
I see where you're going with this. I see where you're going.
And also, I am planting my own chili every year from 10 years. So, you know, the logo was very close to me, but I didn't figure out it that I can use it.
Yes, yeah.
So, you know, and also in Polish language, the word sharp and hot is the same.
Ah, that makes a lot of sense. Right, right.
But mainly because I love hot food, I plant my chilies. Last year, I plant like more than 100 bushes with all the species.
Wow, wow. Okay.
You know, I'm living on countryside. I have a lot of place. I have, since I'm full-time, I'm just living in my home. So I can do everything with garden. I have time for everything now.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Less stress of heading out to work and so on. Yeah. So yes. So that logo, is that pressed or is it etched?
Yes, it's etched, but I am using, first in the past, I was using the ferric chloride. But even after 3-2 months, it was still working with the steel.
Yeah.
So I have a problem because there was some small rust in the logo, and now I am using the saturated solution of salt water and electricity.
Yeah.
It's very clean method. I also record a movie on YouTube when I'm showing the process. That is really easy.
Yeah. I mean, I've watched that, which is why I etch my blades from your video, actually. But I have been thinking about maybe pressing them lately. Just so, you know, so it'll stay on the blade and they don't fade and come off over time. But that's interesting that you're still etching. So that's nice.
Yes, I tried to you know, have a mark in steel and punching it when the steel was hot. But you know, sometimes from time to time, after the heat treating, the blade was bending in the place when the stamp was punched.
Yes, yeah, and I did experiment just the other day actually with a hot blade and putting a stamp on. But when I'm putting the hot blade, because I specifically do chef knives, so they're very thin. So putting the hot blade onto a cold anvil, it just started to warp very quickly.
Exactly, because it's losing the heat faster with the surface of the anvil than on the other side.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about getting some sort of compression there, and having a you know, just pressing it in cold.
Yeah, also the laser is very good for marking blades, but when you are using laser, every chili or any mark will be the same every time.
Yes, yeah.
And when you are etching it, there are no two similar logos.
Yeah, I'd love a laser, but man, they're so expensive. So expensive.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I've finally got another question from Sandy at Combat Knives EN, who are on, I think it was from Instagram. They ask, did you enjoy your time on Forged in Fire?
Okay, this is a very good question because, you know, I just go home first and many people ask me, what about that? Do you feel that you failed? And I am always answering that, you know, I'm not a type of guy who liked competing.
Hmm.
So I just agreed to fly to the New York and be the part of the international episode because of the adventure.
Yeah.
I never think about winning the money and stuff. That is why I wasn't disappointed when I just screw my blade because, yeah, I have to say that I overheated the ball bearing steel, and the ball bearing steel hate two things. It's hate to be forged too cold and heat treated too fat, too hot. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, you could see that you weren't there necessarily for the competition because it seemed as if everybody was just very friendly there. It was one of those episodes where everybody seemed to get on. And I know that you're still friendly with Julien from France here.
Yeah, of course. I love this French friend.
Well, I've interviewed him on the show, and man, that guy's energy. Wow.
Yes, I visited him in August.
Yes.
I was living 10 days with him. So, you know, there was a lot of forging, men's talk and stuff. And if he invited me, I will fly this year also for a few days to him.
Yeah, and a lot of drinking as well, I remember.
Yeah, yeah. He wanted to try Polish vodka, but, you know, next day he was just smashed.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I said I loved having him on the show. And just on Facebook, his updates on Facebook, he's just a funny guy.
Yeah, and I'm really happy that he reached the final because, you know, when I was going to the Fortune Fire, some people from the knife industry, I was known, right?
Hmm. Yeah.
And he was like 4 years of experience and he's really good in forging and in making knives. So he got some feedback from people. Some people from around the world just, you know, they know that someone at Julien is now, yeah?
Yes, exactly. Yes, yeah. He's put his name out there. Yeah.
Yeah, and I might say one more thing more. You know, after a few beers when we were between the recording phase, we were speak with Julien and we decided that if anyone of us will win, we will share the money.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. That's incredible.
So it shows that no one for us is going just for competing and money and stuff. It was, you know, I met some really, it is funny, I meet a friend's nice guy in the US. So I have to fly 12,000 kilometers to meet him.
To meet a French guy, yeah.
Yeah.
So I can see that all of your knives are carbon steels. But lately I've been playing with some stainless, some sort of 12C, 27M, and I've had some really good results from them. So are you only using, is it 80 CRV2 you're using? And what are the characteristics that you love about that steel?
Okay, I use this steel because, first of all, I really like it.
Hmm.
It's very good durable steel, and I have opportunity to buy like 600 kilos.
Wow. Wow.
In the past. So it defined that I am using mainly this steel because I have plenty of it.
Yeah.
And it's very good steel for bushcraft knife because in basic, this steel is using in knife in wood industry.
Hmm.
The big saws are made from this steel. So it's really durable against the wood.
Yeah.
And in bushcrafting, the wood is your main material you are working with.
Yeah, and I suppose you've really got to know the steel well, too. Just using that one steel over and over again, you know,
yes,
you know
exactly.
Its little characteristics. Yeah.
All my knives are selected heat-treated because I like to be that the spine should be a bit softer than a cutting edge. It's very important in outdoor knife because it's way more durable with that. So I know that my knives now have like 60 hertz on cutting edge and 51, 52 on the spine.
Right, yeah. So you can use it for battening, I suppose. So you can hit the spine and batten through wood.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And all the stresses are going out because it's the upper is softer.
Yes, yeah. Okay, okay.
But cool. I am thinking about LMAX. I already bought a big sheet of LMAX steel because everybody says that it's a really good steel. Mm. And I saw in the blade show that Americans like the stainless steels. So if I receive a table, we'll see on the blade show this year. Hmm. I want to make a batch of LMAX steel knives because it's a very it's a top steel, I think, now for knives.
Yeah, and I think some of these really top, you know, high specification stainless steels now, for guys like myself who are just aren't really forging, we're just, you know, we're just shaping out our knives and we're making our knives that way. I think, you know, I'm starting to think more and more that do I need to be using carbon steels?
You know, carbon steel is very good when you are in the bush. Mm. And, you know, your knife became dull because you chop some old hardwood, and you can resharp the knife using a simple sharper or even a hard stone you found it. And you can't do that with powder steel.
Yes, yeah. Yes, that's true, yes. So if you haven't got access to a sharpener, a carbon steel would be better. Yes, I see.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, in the kitchen or for everyday use, the powders still have the advantage that they are rust, they are no rust, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And they are
keeping
the sharpness for a long time, for a long, long time.
Yeah. Okay, okay. So as a successful knife maker who's built a fantastic reputation, how do you scale up production without losing that handmade quality? I mean, you very much trade on your name, so you can't bring in somebody else to up your production. So how are you going to scale that up?
Yeah, that is true because I am watching the knife market in Poland, and there is some, you know, stuff that if the maker is making good knives, but he is going for full time, the grinds are way lower. You know, they are focusing on making more knives.
Yes, yeah.
But
yeah.
The quality is also, let's say, going down a little bit. So I decided that I will not do that. I am focusing on knives. I am not I don't have an employee, right? Because my customers like to know that the knife was made by my two hands, only
exactly
them.
yeah
you know, I don't take orders. I make knives because I have my vision of knives, of good bushcraft knives. So I am not working on other projects than mine.
Right, okay. So no commissions. You just make your knife and you sell the knife.
Exactly. I am just selling what I have. I am not taking orders because, you know, when sometimes is wanted to order a knife, he pays you some, let's say, half of a price to be sure that he will pay the second price after making knife. And, you know, he's calling every day and asking what the knife, that he decided that the handle should be micarta, not a stabilized wood, and you just glue up the handle.
Yeah.
So I tried in the past, but it's not a good way for me. I want to make knives.
Yeah.
Only the knives I like, because sometimes, you know, people are ordering some fighting knives with false edge sharpen, and I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the dream for me too. No longer commissions, but just actually make my own, what I think a good knife is, and then sell that on. But yeah, hopefully one day, hopefully I'll get there too.
You know, I was really afraid that if I'm a full-time and I have to, you know, deliver a living for my family.
Yes, yeah.
I will have to take some custom orders because I will sell 5 knives a month, but I need to sell 10, you know? And after this year, I saw that, no, I don't need to take orders. I just realized that my vision is okay. People like my design, like my level of details. And no, if something is working, do not change it.
Let's talk about one of our sponsors, Tormach. To get great razor-sharp and repeatable edges, you're going to need a Tormach. To find out more, go to tormach.com, which is T-O-R-M-E-K.com. Okay, let's get back to the show. So how much time are you spending in the workshop each day?
Well, I'm trying to spend at least 6-7 hours. But, you know, 2 small kids, homework, because since I'm full-time, I'm also a full-time father.
Yes, yeah.
And so I just take kids, drive them to school, and like around 9 a.m. I'm the workshop.
Yeah.
And I'm going for kids like 3 p.m. And when they go sleep, I try to go for 2 more hours. But, you know, sometimes I'm too tired after making homework.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So did you expect that when you made your very first knife? Did you expect that this would now be your career? And what were you doing before knife making?
Before knife making, I was a very boring guy in the office. I was a Cisco guy.
Oh, right.
Okay, so I was working with huge corporation. And I have 2 jobs in the past. So first the corporation, then I was making knives in the evenings. But, you know, it was really hard.
Yes, to juggle the two. Yes.
Yeah. So in the past, I would never expect that I will make knives for a living in the future. So now I'm living my dream. I must say that because now I do what I love. No pressure on it.
Yeah, you're in charge of your own destiny. Exactly.
Exactly. So my life now is very slow, finally, because, you know, working in a big office, I was having the whole time zone, the Africa and Europe, I'd close east. Everything was under me. So there was a lot of pressure in my work, and I was always in a hurry.
Yes, yeah.
And now I just know that my workshop is 5 meters from my home now. So when I have 10 minutes because kids are, you know, eating something, I always can do that and even clean my desk, do something.
Yes, yeah. Living the dream.
But without pressure. Yeah, exactly.
Living the dream. So what makes for a great knife, in your opinion? I know it's a hard one because obviously a different knife will have a different purpose. But in general, what makes a great knife?
After many years of making knives, I think that the heat treatment is the key, because you can make a really nice looking knife, but if it's too soft or too brittle, it will not do the task. And also the design. You know, if you are closing your eyes and taking bushcraft knife to your hands, you need to feel the knife, that you are working with it in the bush. Not watching the knife, but just feel it with closed your eyes. So the shape of handle, the balance, because the balance is very important. Some guys are forgetting about balance. Balance should be on blade.
Yeah. Okay. So knocking hot bits of metal into sort of pointy, sharp shapes hasn't really changed much in hundreds, maybe thousands of years. So where do you think things are heading? I mean, technology has improved almost every other industry. So what would you like technology to do for knife makers or blacksmiths? If you had your ultimate dream, what would that be?
First of all, I am the person who think that blacksmithing is very good, but it's not as important now than in the past, because in the past the steel was very low quality, so the forging was necessary.
Yes, yeah.
And now when you are buying a sheet of very good quality tool steel from the mill, the forging is not so important. I think, because I did many tests with the ATC RV2, right? With forging it, with not forging it. And I can say that it's still very good for stock removal, but not for forging.
Right, yeah. Okay.
So time's changing. Some people want to have a perfect knife with, you know, powder steel, folding knife with titanium. So, okay, the technology is very good, but also there's a plenty of people that want a traditional high carbon steel knife. And it's really good because I'm making knives like this.
They're your customer. So making a knife by hand can be obviously, you know, a very long process. So have you got any tips for our listeners for speeding up that process at all?
No, speeding up the process, it's not so good. Because I learned the patience on making knives. 10 years ago, you know, I wanted to make 3 knives a day, just show them on the internet and get some likes on Facebook. But now, you know, I know that if I spend 3 more hours on the details, the customer will be really satisfied. So I am giving advice not to be hurried, just to focus on details and spend three more hours on a knife, and you will see the difference.
Yes, yeah. Just make, yeah, put the extra hour or so in, just get it to be perfect. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, just make the satin up to 800 paper, not to 320, and you will see the difference, because I am trying to make satin on all my knives. It's a pain in the ass. It's the worst part of the process. You can't do it by machine. It must be do by your hands, right?
Yes, yeah. So are there any important steps that other knife makers and bladesmiths maybe overlook that you've seen?
Okay, sometimes makers, but mainly the young one, they are focusing on business cards, on boxes, on stickers, but they are not focusing on removing the scratches from the knife in the start of the bevel.
So it goes back to that whole thing of taking your time and just slowing the process down and making
sure
everything's perfect.
Yes, sometimes it's too much marketing, and the product should be defending itself.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's very good advice, very good. So what is your favorite and least favorite part about making a knife?
Okay, so the worst part is making a satin. Because, you know, when I heat treat selective with the Hammond line, so you are receiving very good satin on the hard part of the blade, but you can also receive scratches on the mute part of the spine. So it's really tough to have a, you know, satin that looks very solid, because there is a difference between hardness on the blade and the satin will look different.
Right, yes.
So it's hard, yes. And the best part, I think, when I'm receiving a mail from customer after 1 year, after he buy it, and he's sending some pictures with knife, you know, after 1 year, it's not shiny and beautiful like in the day that he just bought it, but I know that he's using the knife.
Yeah, that's always a lovely feel, is that when you know your knife is being used.
Yes, and also really nice is when I'm on the blade show, on the knife shows, and some guy who, you know, take my knife 2 years ago, he just going and buying another one because the one he just bought 2 years ago, he gave as a present.
Ah, lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely. Okay. So I know you're a very busy man. I know you have to pick your kids up from school. So I've got a couple of questions that I'll ask every guest at the end of an interview.
Of course, please.
So the first is, what are you finding challenging? Anything that you'd love to make but you haven't built up to yet? So is that one thing that you haven't quite tackled or mastered yet?
Okay, so I always was thinking about making my own woods. I was a part of process when someone make a woods, but I never make this, you know, crystallic Damascus by my own, because it's very long and hard process.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
So maybe in the future I will try it. But you know, I know that it's really hard, because after smelting it you need to forge it. And it's extremely hard.
Yeah, yeah. So something that will come with time, you think. It's something that you won't put aside, but one day you will get to it.
Yes, exactly.
And the final question comes from another one of our listeners. This is another Sandy, so that's two Sandys on the show. But this one is Sandy from Young Knives.
Hi, guys. It's Sandy from Young Knives. Michael, could you tell us who inspired you, or what inspired you to get into knife making? Because you seem to be the man that everybody else has been inspired by.
Oh, it's a very difficult question, because, you know, it's changing. I was in love with some maker 8 years ago, but in some point I decided that because they are also changing designs and style, and his current style changed so much that I am not following the maker anymore.
Right, yeah. Okay.
So it will be really hard to put some names here. You know, I'm looking for inspirations mainly on Instagram, because I am watching plenty of makers. And sometimes, you know, I see that he make a pins from my cart, and I see, well, that is really nice. And I just tried to make some pins from my kata myself, right?
Hmm.
So there is always someone better than you. It's impossible to be the best. I am explaining it very often because, you know, I am always learning myself, and I know that there are plenty of makers better than me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the great thing about the likes of YouTube and Instagram, is that there's just this instant sort of stream of inspiration, isn't there? You know, you can just sit there and you can have 10 minutes and your head is just buzzing with ideas, and, you know, you found some great makers.
Yeah, this is really cool, because 10 years ago, you know, when you are putting knife making in Google, there were just online stores, but there wasn't some good sources of pictures of designs. Now you have an Instagram, the Pinterest, the Facebook.
Hmm.
So there is a plenty of inspirations over there.
Yes, yeah.
I'm not saying by copying makers, because it's a big shame, but inspiration, right?
Exactly, exactly. And it's a very fine line, but yeah, you're right. You know, if you're copying somebody, you're not learning here. There's no point.
Exactly.
Okay, well, thank you so much for taking the time out. As I say, I know you're a very busy man. I've certainly learned a lot from this interview, and I'm hoping others will. But, you know, have a great 2018, and hopefully we speak again soon.
Yeah, and I really say that thank you for the invitation. It's a big honor for me, because the makers that were before me, there are really big names, and many of them I just, you know, follow because they are really good. So now I'll be in the list with Liam, with Alec. It's really nice for me.